Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, April the 15th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And it just occurred to me, Cindy, as we were logging on, there's a joke in today's day. Today would have been tax day. Everybody got tax day off.
That's true. You know, coaches will talk about this all the time, right? That sometimes when something's going on that someone doesn't like, we start asking them to, we start trying to dig around and see if there's a payoff.
Right.
Right? Like, well, I don't like that I'm sick. Well, what's the payoff? Well, I am home from work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This was a pretty big thing to have happen just because we didn't want to deal with taxes.
But isn't that the way it usually goes, though?
But yes, tax day. I saw because we're on video. For those that are just listening, I was watching Walt do the announcement, do the intro, and I suddenly got this big smile on his face.
What is this about?
Yeah, it's like it's April 15th. Hey.
It just kind of it hit me because, you know, I always look at the time and date on my computer to kind of remind myself, okay, I want to give the right date and so forth.
Right.
And then I saw April 15th. I said, April 15th? You gotta be kidding.
Right. April 15th. Well, everything has changed.
Yeah, and continues to change.
Including the tax day.
Change is the essence of things. And we're getting a strong dose of it right now, but change is the essence. And one of the things that I think is very important going through this time, and it's something we really emphasize here on the show, is choosing our perspective. Because the more that we choose a perspective that it's in alignment with what we prefer, what we want, first of all, the better we feel. Second of all, the better our experience is. And third of all, the easier it is for us to adapt to change.
Yeah.
Because change can be a little traumatic too. I mean, right now it's very traumatic, but even in just in quote normal times, it can be traumatic. There can be a trauma associated with it. And it's always due to the way we look at whatever the situation is, no matter what it is.
Well, it's that what some people call the lizard brain. I like to call it the squirrel brain, right? Mm-hmm. But the most primitive part of our brain, it's about the size of a walnut or smaller, and it's at the base of our brain stem. And it is the part of our brain that controls a lot of our decision making and the way we move through life. And that primitive part of our brain hates change. It's afraid of change because change represents the unknown. So that makes sense, right? That like we shy away from change, we don't like change. And that, like you said, change can be traumatic. Mm-hmm. And so, but at the same time, you know, everything, it's like there's that little drawing. It's like everything you want is outside of your comfort zone.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think you're right about the frame we put it in. And focusing on what we want and what's going right. And for the first reason that you gave, like that's always my number one reason is that it feels better.
Yeah.
And even regardless of, you know, putting that into that context of that we're consciously creating out of our feelings and thoughts. So we want things to feel better so that we'll attract more of what feels better, that kind of thing.
Right.
Even if we don't entertain those ideas, it's just a really simple fact that our fears and our worries are always attached to the past or the future. And our power is always in the present. So just making a choice that feels better in the present, it's like, that's all we can control is the present. Might as well go for the frame that feels better.
And right? The way that I started the show, in my mind, was an illustration of that. That's why I was saying it's so great. I love the way we do our show here because through doing the show and through my own work that I do in myself and the work that you do on yourself and so on and so forth, I've gotten to the point now where despite the fact we got all this craziness going on, I was able to look at the date and find something really funny in it quickly.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen when you're in a traumatized state of mind. That happens when you're in a good state of mind.
Right.
You can't really find the humor very easily when you're in a traumatized state of mind.
Well, that's why, and we've done whole podcasts about this before, but that's why sometimes when people are really having a struggle in their life, regardless of what it is, it's like, watch a funny movie.
Yeah.
Like, do something that's going to bring some laughter to cause that shift, you know. So, in a couple of my groups, I've actually asked the question. It's like, okay, tell me all your favorite funny movies, because, you know, it's good to have a list of, like, a concrete list of things you can do to feel better, whatever that is. I know a lot of people right now are, because we're so limited in what we can do, people are going outside and, you know, taking walks because it's one thing they can do.
Right.
And kind of, I think it seems from some of the posts I've seen that people have an expanded awareness of what they're seeing on their walks, like enjoying nature, looking at squirrels, whatever it is they see on their walk, because we're kind of all slowed down, not so busy. So there is, you know, there's that part of it. And then there's also, you know, there is loss right now and grief right now, and we can't ignore those things. We have to not shame them or make them wrong, but recognize they're part of life too.
Yep.
And, you know, there are some things we can't control. I think that, I don't know if I talked about this on a podcast, but I talked about it on a Facebook Live in my group, because I thought it was really relevant. It's that whole Stephen Covey idea of your circle of control, or your sphere of control. And then, like, if you were to draw a circle and then draw a bigger circle around it, that would be your circle of influence. And then an even bigger circle around it, that is your circle or your sphere of concern. And whenever I think of that model right now, I think that biggest circle is like the whole globe. Because right now what's happening is the whole globe. So we're concerned about what's happening in the world, all over the world. And yet if we focus all of our attention and energy on that sphere of concern, then our sphere of influence shrinks.
Right.
But if we focus our energy on the sphere of control, which is what we do have control over, then our sphere of influence can start to be stronger and grow and move out and actually touch the part of, you know, the circle of concern. So I think I've been trying to remember that. I actually have a little post-it right here. And it says sphere of control, influence, concern, just to remind myself that I can't control the pandemic, but I can control what I'm taking in through my eyes and ears. I can control my diet. I can control my environment, my house, what things are like here. I can control that.
And I think so, we can also control our preferences. What do we prefer? It's easy to lose track of that when you're in the midst of something that's really challenging like this. But that's when I think it's most important to take some time. And that's what gratitude and appreciation are all about. Taking the time to remember, oh yeah, I really do value X, whatever X is.
Yeah. I taught this little trick. I remembered it a week ago and thought, oh my gosh, I haven't thought of this in a long time, but it's something that I've taught to clients that are dealing with feeling anything that they don't want to feel. And that is to find something in your environment that you appreciate. So look around and see something you appreciate. And it might even just be a color. Like, maybe, you know, you're sitting in your bedroom and you can look at your bedspread and you really like that color. You know, it's just, it doesn't have to be any big, expensive, fancy, precious item. It's just something you appreciate. And then the trick is, appreciate it, take a deep breath, and then appreciate it 10% more.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like, well, how do you do that? But your brain just knows how to do it when you give it that direction, right? It's just to appreciate it a little bit more. And it brings you so much into the present moment and into gratitude and appreciation, that those feelings of being really ungrounded or feelings of being uncomfortable or worried or whatever kind of fade away a little bit.
Actually, I would say it's pretty easy to do that extra 10% if you think about it in terms of this. All you're really having to do is give it more attention, which is what you're doing.
Yes.
You're giving it more attention. And so therefore, you are giving it 10%. In fact, the longer that you give attention to it and the more spiritual energy, so to speak, that you give to it, the more, you know, focus you give to it, the more attention you're giving. So it becomes 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, 60%. It just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
Without end.
It's so funny because I remember actually doing this on the phone with a client one time years and years ago that was really feeling, you know, charged about something. Mm. And I said, okay, I said, take a deep breath. So, and the reason why I give the bedspread example is I think that's what she said, right? It was like, can you look around the room right now and see something you appreciate? It's like, I appreciate the color of this bedspread. I said, okay, now I just want you to appreciate it 10% more. And you can just hear like the relief, like, okay, like, all right. And it's a simple little thing, but it works. So why not use it? If it works, it works.
And it really illustrates, I mean, you didn't hit it directly, so I'll have to kind of draw a line here, but it indirectly illustrates that she was focusing most likely on whatever this thing was that she didn't like.
Right.
In a big, big way, had been focusing on it for quite some time, was continuing to focus on it. And the act of looking at the bedspread and appreciating the bedspread was almost like an annoying distraction from that thing that she'd been focusing on that had been consuming her life. And the reason I say that's the important thing to look at is she was taking energy away from the thing that she didn't like, and for just a fraction of time, putting it on the thing that she did like. And that's the exercise, taking it away from what you don't like and putting it on to what you do like.
Because the interesting thing is that, you know, if you would look at it as each of us have like the same amount of energy,
mm-hmm.
and we're just focusing it, different percentage of it in different directions, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you put more of your energy over there, it has to come from somewhere.
That's right.
Right? So that's the easiest way to create a shift. It's the same as when we talk about the levels of energy, where the lower levels are like victim energy, conflict energy, all of that. And then the higher levels are higher and higher. We get into compassion and love and passion and, you know, joy. And we all have a certain amount of energy. And if we start putting it towards joy or towards those higher energy levels, it automatically, you know, as soon as we release those lower energy, it has to go somewhere, pops mm-hmm. up into the higher energy levels.
It does.
So it's a really good skill to be able to recognize that you can shift energy
mm-hmm.
without making that energy bad.
Yeah, right.
Right?
We don't have to shame ourselves. We don't have to shame the energy. We don't have to shame anything.
Right. Because as soon as we put that judgment on it as bad, then we're down the judgment trail. And then we go down the guilt and blame trail. And there's just nothing good over there, you know?
It's 100%
ugh. Right? Yeah. I was thinking about this, though, like, because we've been talking about relationships on Wednesday. And I had read a couple posts from people that have really been struggling with this whole thing that we're all going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been affecting their relationships, probably sure. because we're all a lot of togetherness. and I started thinking about years and years ago, my best friend and I started a business. And when we started the business, we went on a trip to get some mentoring from somebody who had a successful business that was the same as our business. So some training and some mentoring. And we were still making the decision if we were going to do this or not. And the person asked us if we fought well. And we had been best friends at the time for like 20 something years. And we thought, we were surprised by the question, and then we were like, we thought about it. We were like, yeah, we do. Like, we've been best friends for 25 years or something. Like, so yes, we've had disagreements, and we're great at dealing with them and mm-hmm. understanding each other and moving through any kind of conflict. So I was thinking about that today, that the two things that really hurt relationships and make relationships difficult are judgment and blame.
Mm.
Right? And I was like, well, it's just energy levels. It's just like anything else. It's the thing that hurts our own conscious creation, whether we blame other people or we're blaming ourselves. Blame mm-hmm. is blame. Whether we're judging other people, or we're judging ourselves, we're judging our emotions, we're judging our action. You know, whenever that judgment comes in, that's what causes problems. So I started thinking about people that are experiencing so much togetherness now that it's causing some friction, right?
Sure.
And like, I thought about that conversation of, do you guys fight well? Do you know how to disagree? Do you know, like, some people will tell me, it's like, oh, we, you know, my partner and I never fight. And I, you know, I always say, if you don't have a disagreement once in a while, then one of you doesn't think for yourself.
There's truth to that. Yeah. I think there's right. also a distinction between disagreeing and fighting.
Yeah. 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 But some people make a judgment on any kind of disagreement. You know, I always thought it was funny when my kids were growing up, if I spoke to them in a stern voice, they would say, "Mom, stop yelling at me." And I never yell about anything, right? It's like, you don't know what yelling is if you But I think we do that. That's, I think, a judgment that we put on it, right? It's like, if we, because disagreements don't usually feel good to people. Mm. And of course, fights never feel good. And yes, there, I agree with you, there's a big difference. But do you know how to have a conversation where you're not in agreement? How do you work through, you know, and I'm talking about, these can be little things. You know how many people get into a flat out fight and then okay. say later, I don't even remember what started it.
Sure. Well, if you really think about it, every fight starts off as a little disagreement. If you look at the very, very origins of it, very original place that it all started, it started off as this little thing and it quickly escalated, but it always started small.
Right. So I'll let it, can I give some tips about this?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the first one, and that is the knowing the difference between an observation and a judgment. And so, right. So the example that I like to use sometimes is to say that if you say Bill played a whole season of baseball and never got a base hit. Okay, that's an observation. Mm-hmm. We can look back at all the stats and see if Bill got a base hit.
Sure.
And how many games Bill played.
Right.
Just an observation. Mm-hmm. Now, if I say Bill is a terrible baseball player, that's a judgment, mm-hmm. right? So like when we are going to have a conversation about something, it's very often much easier of a conversation if we'll remember that and we'll just state an observation, right? So there's a difference between saying, you told me you'd be here at 8 o'clock and you showed up at 8:15. Then if you say, well, because you don't care enough about me to show up on time. Mm-hmm. One's an observation and the other one's a judgment. So if we can stick to observations. And then the second thing is to keep things about you and how you feel. Mm-hmm. Because that's something that really can't be argued with. Like if I say to you, Walt, I feel really nervous about the podcast today. I have like a knot in my stomach. Like, what are you going to say? It's like, no, you don't. No, I mean, that's all me.
Well, I might ask you if it was because of the guys who were working outside your window, but that's another topic.
There's so much noise outside my window, y'all. It was incredible. They're doing construction like 6 yards from my office window, and they're making so much noise. I'm so glad you can't hear it. They're gone. I think Walt did some kind of LOA magic and just imagined them cleaning up.
You and I raised the vibration. That's what it was. Yeah, and they just couldn't manifest in that vibration, so they had to go somewhere else.
So if you keep it about you, even when you're dealing with another person and something that happens bothers you, right? Like if someone says something and you feel a certain way because of it, you can still let them know, but keep it about you. So when we make a judgment about them and say, well, because you are so whatever, right? Because you are so obnoxious to say this to me. Instead of saying, when you said whatever, I felt, hurt or angry or sad or fearful or whatever, you're just keeping it about you instead of putting it on them. And that can help a lot. Like, that is one of the biggest game changers in having a conversation and being able to be open and vulnerable with somebody and let them know how you feel, mm-hmm. is to not blame or shame them for your feelings, because my feelings are my responsibility. And it doesn't matter what someone else is saying, I get to choose how I feel about it. And so the other part is knowing the difference between feelings and judgments.
Mm-hmm. Very big.
So if I say to you, Walt, you said whatever you said to me, and I feel insulted, or I feel disrespected. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point, disrespected and insulted are not feelings. They're judgments on what I think you just said.
That's true.
They're judgments about you, that you just were disrespectful or that you insulted me. And those are actions that I'm suddenly putting on you. So it's so much better to say, when you said whatever, I felt sad, right? Or I felt like a feeling word, not a judgment on your actions. Mm. So
not an easy distinction to make when you're in the midst of the passion of the moment, but it's a great one if you can learn it.
Well, it's just about learning it. Here's what helps. It's having a really good feeling word vocabulary, because most of us have about 5 or 6 feeling word vocabulary, like, right? But the basic ones are mad, glad, sad, and scared. Mm. Those are the 4 kind of basic emotions. So you can start there. If you don't know anymore, that's enough. Yeah. But then, of course, I once had a list of like 1,000 feeling words. It was amazing.
Oh, 1,000.
Right. And so if you can learn to start, it takes a while at first to be able to say, how do I feel? Mm. What am I feeling? But it's not, I feel abused, I feel insulted, I feel disrespected, I feel taken advantage of. None of those are feelings. They're all judgments about what someone else is doing.
It's true. It's very true.
And they all might be true.
Yeah.
But they're not feelings. And so as soon as you use words like that, you're pointing the finger at the other person. And what does that mean you're doing? Blaming and judging.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's a really low level of energy. So it's hard to create anything good from that level. You don't create things that feel good from that level. Yeah.
There were 2 thoughts I had as you were describing that, and it was described beautifully. First one being, there have been times, particularly in my past, not so much lately being in the last few years, but further in my past, where I would have had a hard time identifying what I was feeling using any label. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Abraham Hicks approach really worked for me, because all I had to do with Abraham Hicks was say, does it feel good or does it feel bad? Do I like the feeling or do I dislike the feeling?
Yes.
And I didn't have to figure out, was it sadness? Was it loneliness? Was it frustration? It just didn't feel good. It was that simple.
Yeah. You know? And the simple question that I've heard you say before is like, what would feel better?
Yes.
Right?
Which is a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
The other thought that came to my mind, and this is sort of like the advanced version, I think, of one of the tips that you gave, because you were talking about, are you using words that have feelings associated, or are they words that have blame associated with them? And I had this little this little conversation going on in my head with some abstract fake person. Like, I was hearing this other person, I don't know who it was, just saying this thing, and they were saying very angrily and very frustrated, I feel so unhappy with you right now.
Okay, so that's it. So then we go here. We recognize that whenever we feel something that we don't like, even if we can't name it, it is because we have a need that is not being met.
Yes.
So, I mean, think about things that don't have to do with other people. Like, if you've ever missed a couple of meals for whatever reason, maybe unintentionally, or maybe intentionally, maybe you've decided to do a fast. Mm. It doesn't feel really good.
True.
Hunger pains don't feel good, right? So when you feel something that doesn't feel good, it's because you have a need that's not being met. In that case, you need food, mm-hmm. right? Or, you know what they say, there's a great acronym, HALT, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Don't make decisions when you're in any of those states.
That's right.
Right? So when you have a need that's not being met, you know it because you have feelings that feel uncomfortable. When your needs are being met, then you have feelings that feel good or pleasurable or comfortable. And so when you go back to that, like, I feel so unhappy. Now, what you said, I feel so unhappy with you right now. Right? Right? There's that finger pointing with you. If you like take a moment, and sometimes I have done this before where I really had to like kind of strain my brain for a minute, especially in those times where it's just so much easier to blame someone else, right? So much easier to say, oh, you're such an idiot. And it's your fault that this isn't working. That might be easy. It doesn't help solve anything. But if you can say, okay, I am so unhappy right now. Why am I unhappy? What is it that I need? Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? It might be that you need, like, respect is a basic human need.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So even though I might need respect, and the fact that someone is being disrespectful to me is causing me to feel unhappy. It's I'm feeling unhappy. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling disrespected. That's not a feeling, right? So communicating it is like, I feel really unhappy because I have a need for respect. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a variation on the same theme that I think might be fun to address. Well, fun perhaps is the wrong word.
Beneficial, maybe?
Beneficial, yeah, that's good. And that is, to kind of use your baseball analogy, you talked about saying, well, Bill has no hits in the last 15 at-bats, you know. There are a couple ways you could say that. You could say, well, Bill doesn't have any hits in his last 15 at-bats. Or you could say, oh, Bill doesn't have any hits in his last 15 at-bats. Can you believe it?
Yeah, tone.
Totally different
tone
feelings.
Tone is important. Right, right. You can also, when you're listening to someone speak, and it's interesting, like we're on video for our podcast, and people that I coach, if they're in the United States, we coach via telephone. But if they're outside of the United States, we often use Skype. And I've been asked before, I've been asked by, you know, clients when they're hiring me, they're really surprised that I don't do video. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that when you're on video with someone, you're generally giving your attention to what you see. Mm-hmm. And that takes away from my ability to hear what I hear.
Ah, okay.
And I always jokingly say I can hear facial expressions.
I like that though. That's good.
I can hear, and it's the charge in someone's voice, the energy that shows up when someone's speaking can tell you so much. And when you learn how to listen to yourself that way, you'll recognize when you're talking about something, if there's a charge on it, right? You'll recognize because your voice does what you just did, right? It's like that. It's building up the energy there. And so when you get really good at this with yourself, it will change all your relationships because you start making many more observations than judgments, which already just that act is going to pop your energy up from those lower levels into higher levels. And the higher your energy level, the higher your level of consciousness, the easier it is for you to create at will whatever you want to create.
That's true.
Yeah. Right? So in these times when we're all isolated, we're all at home, my friend, one of my best friends, her business is that she helps people use their homes as manifesting tools. Mm. And she is refusing to call this isolation or social distancing. She calls it cocooning.
Oh, okay.
We're all in our cocoons. And I said to her, it's the perfect word to use because of the transformation that takes place in a cocoon.
Right, sure.
And when we all come out of this, things are going to be different. We will be different from staying here in our cocoon. So in this time where we are either alone, because that's troublesome for some people, when the only connection that they get is when they leave their house and now they can't leave their house. Or for people that are suddenly enjoying a little too much togetherness, these ideas.
I love that phrasing.
These ideas are important. And you can change your whole life and your relationships completely with this little set of ideas. Mm-hmm. Observations instead of judgments, feelings, and then knowing what you need and knowing the difference between a need and a strategy.
Very good. I like that.
Very, very different, right? So if I tell you, Walt, I need you to pick me up and take me to lunch. Mm-hmm. That is not a need. That is a strategy that I've devised in my head to get some other need met. Okay. Now, I may need transportation. I may need food. I may need friendship and connection. But I don't really, having you come get me and take me to lunch somewhere, that is how I'm strategizing to get these needs met.
Right.
So many times, here's how to tell. If you think you need a specific person to do a specific thing, it's probably a strategy.
Yes.
Right?
Very good.
Right. So it's like people to say, well, I need my husband to XYZ, or I need my wife to XYZ, whatever it is. Probably a strategy. Doesn't mean it's not a valid need.
No.
But we're all responsible for getting our own needs met. Right? I think I told this story before, but when I was first dating my husband in 2011, I was just, you know, having so much fun and it felt so wonderful and it still does, but I was just so excited. And a couple of times I picked up the phone and went to send him a text that said, "You make me so happy."
Ah.
And I erased it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I feel so happy when I'm with you."
Beautiful.
Right?
Beautiful.
Because it's not his job to make me feel anything. He can't make me feel anything. Nope. So those little language tweaks, right? Strategy is just the way you think you have to get that need met.
I love
go a little deeper, figure out what the need is.
Yeah. I love this idea of strategy. I think it's a beautiful concept. And it really cuts to the core in a way that a lot of the other things we've talked about in the past don't do it as effectively. Not that we've talked about rubbish, because we haven't. But this is like this is one of the best ones that I've heard so far. That what we're really talking about is a strategy, because I think it's probably the factor that's behind most questions, for instance, that get asked about the law of attraction. You know, how do I get X? How do I make something happen? What's my strategy for attracting this thing that I want, rather
right.
than being in the place of putting out the vibration of what I want?
Yeah.
It becomes a replacement.
Yeah.
If I have the strategy, I don't have to worry about how I actually feel about it.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like recognizing why we want the thing, mm-hmm. what the feeling is, what is it going to give us, right? It's like, if you go like five questions deep, I want whatever. Why do you want that? Because, and why do you want that? And what is that going to give you? And what is that going to give you? You will dig down and it's always just a feeling.
It is.
I'll feel happy. I'll feel secure. I'll feel free, whatever it is. Those are three of the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
People either want a mate, or they want money, or they want better health, or they want to be clear on their career path or their life purpose, right? But when you get to, it's like, why? Because they will feel secure, mm-hmm. or they will feel freedom, or they will feel healthier, happier, more joyful. Those are, you know, it's basically it. So like you said, when we can figure out the feeling that we want, that we can kind of not be so worried about strategies, because strategies are so often the how, and focusing on the how is the thing that
that's right
trips us up, right? How many times the things usually get delivered to us in a way that wasn't the how we expected.
I love the fact of calling it a strategy, because for me it's a great way to remind myself, to ask myself, am I feeling or am I strategizing with whatever this thing I'm focusing on? Because if I'm strategizing, that's a clue to me that I'm really not focused on what it is that I'm feeling.
And the feelings and needs are connected together.
They are.
Right? So it's like, if we realize that we think somebody needs to do a certain thing, but we go, what's the real need there? Mm-hmm. You know, one of my very first experiences of being coached, I volunteered to be the client in a demonstration, and it was about personal growth, right? In the sense of personal growth being like learning new things, expanding your person, right?
Right.
And so I answered the question, what was I wanting to learn? I wanted to learn French. And the coach, who's still one of my favorite coaches on the planet, asked me why. And, you know, why? Because the thing was, is that I had bought a French program. You know, I was like, yes, I was gung-ho for it. But then I wasn't following up, wasn't doing it. And she was asking me questions. And what we finally got to, she said, well, but what would you do if you suddenly could speak French fluently? What would that give you? And I said, oh, well, my oldest son speaks fluent French. And it would be so great to be able to speak to him. And she said, so what you really want is connection with your son.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I like got chills. I wanted to cry. And here I went into the coaching session. Oh, yeah, I'll volunteer. I can do this. This isn't going to be emotional for me. It's just about learning French. How could it be emotional? And then when she said, oh, this is it. And, you know, at the time my son was in college. And so he was in that place where he was developing his own life, his own world.
Sure.
And you know, we've always been really close. We're still really close. But, you know, it was kind of that coming apart phase where he was going to be living somewhere else, doing his own thing. And we just weren't connected as much.
Right.
And, oh, my gosh. So learning French was my strategy.
Yeah.
My need that I had was for connection. And it's my responsibility to get my need met. And so I found other ways to connect without having to go through a 5-year long French immersion program, right?
Which is great. I mean, nothing wrong with learning French. I mean,
No.
It was great. Yeah. You know, just, but how great that you got to the core of it, because then you could really interact with what it was that you really needed. That was
Yeah. So that's such a great example of the difference between a need and a strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
It occurs to me that Wednesdays are always Relationship Wednesdays. And we've been talking about today the most important relationship we have, the one we have with ourselves, and all the different ways that we play these little games with ourselves, and we distract ourselves from what our real stuff is and so forth, and how we can get back to focusing on what our real needs are. And all, I mean, this is like the ultimate in relationships right here.
Well, and how we, like you said, distract ourselves, how we sometimes put the blame outside of ourselves for why we don't have the things that we want, for why our needs aren't getting met. Oh, it's because, you know, it's someone else that's not meeting my needs, and it's someone else that, you know, and it's like, no. If we come to the place where we're willing to take what I call radical responsibility for our needs getting met, for our own feelings and emotions, we will up-level our ability to create consciously, like a major amount. It's amazing.
You're just going through this is bringing up something for me that has been kind of an ongoing thing for me, which is wanting to attract more money into my life. And my ability to attract money has improved substantially, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years, but it's not up to the level I want it to be yet. And I keep asking myself, okay, so maybe I need, what does it need to do? Maybe I need to be focusing more on, you know, the ask. Maybe I need to focus more on how I, you know, how I feel and taking inventory of what I'm grateful for and so forth. But as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm realizing I also have a very strong tendency to strategize how to get the money to come in rather than spending the time focusing on what it will do for me to have the money come in.
Right. And a question that I really like to ask here is, if suddenly the money was just pouring in at an unprecedented level for you, what could go wrong?
What could go wrong? That's an interesting question.
That's the money block.
Yeah.
That's the thing. When people say, well, when people begin to answer that question, oh, well, all my friends and relatives would suddenly want me to be giving them money, or I'd have to pay a whole bunch of taxes and I don't want to do that. Or I don't know if I could manage that much money. Or what if that money just magnified in me? I don't know. Maybe I would just want to shop all the time and become a hoarder. Or, you know, they have all these things that are underneath the surface. And like you were talking about at the very beginning of the show today, the idea of change, right? Mm-hmm. And change, we often shy away from change because change is going to bring the unknown. Mm. And so for those of us who haven't yet attracted multiple millions, that's a change for us. And so it brings in a whole bunch of things that we don't know how we would deal with it.
It's funny though, because as you were describing, the next question to ask is, well, assuming you have all this money flowing in, what could go wrong? The first question that goes through my mind is, what do you mean? What could go wrong? There's nothing that could go wrong.
There are a lot of answers to that question that I've heard.
There are. Yeah. There are a ton of answers to it. But even as I was saying that, and even as I was thinking, and I was realizing, you know, the moment that that money comes flowing in, my perspective does change. And being who we are as human beings, we're really good at finding something that's wrong. We're really good at finding something that's not right about this situation. We are the ultimate self-criticizers in the universe.
You know, for whatever reason, it's like we're so good at figuring out what we don't want.
Yeah.
Right? It's like even when someone asks us the most simple question, what would you like for dinner tonight? Well, I don't want pizza. Mm. We had that last week. It's like, but what do we want? And so all of those questions that are under the surface and all of those reasons for rejecting any kind of change, they all meet somewhere. Like, in other words, the idea of polarities and that everything contains its opposite, right? So we would normally think that having a ton of money offers us a lot of freedom. I can buy what I want. I can go where I want. I can hire somebody to do the jobs I don't like doing. Like, that's a lot of freedom.
Right.
And we go to the other end of the scale where we have no money at all. And we say, there's no freedom there at all. We're very constricted there. We're very limited in what we can do. However, just let those swap over and see how they contain their opposite and say, you know what? If I have no money, I don't have to manage that money. So I'm free from managing that money. I'm free from making decisions about investments. Mm. I'm free. There's a lot of freedom over there in not having any money.
Oh, yeah,
and on the other hand, with all this money, I have to make all these decisions about how to manage it. If I'm hiring people, I have to manage them. I have to maintain the things that I buy. That feels really constricting all of a sudden and like a lot of weight. So to be able to...
Yeah.
To be able to hold both of those ideas, that's where the power is to be able to balance those and hold both of those ideas, because they're all in there. Everything contains its opposite.
Which is a fascinating thing, the fact that everything does contain its opposite. Often we are blind to or have blinded ourselves to what those opposites might be. And I'm going to go into an example that I had actually promised myself I was going to stay away from this week. I was going to stay away from talking about the pandemic in any great detail.
Yeah.
But the illustration here is so perfect, I can't avoid it. you mentioned how we are really, really good at focusing on what we don't want. The pandemic is a perfect example of that, because that's what people are doing, mostly outside of LOA circles, positive psychology circles. They're doing it 98, 99% of the time. They're focusing on the news items and the politicians and the whole thing, yeah, over and over, ad infinitum, all these, yeah, terrible things. I don't like this. I don't like that. This is awful. I'm scared about this. I'm afraid of that. But never are we taking the time in that scenario to ask, what do I want instead?
Or what is the upside? What am I experiencing right now that is good? And that's look, right, it may be only a tiny sliver of something compared to all the other things that you could focus on that don't feel good, but it's just the determination and the use of will to focus on it.
Yeah.
To turn back to it and focus on it. It doesn't mean that you're not going to pay attention to what's going on completely. It doesn't mean you don't care about other people.
I dare you to pull it off. I dare you to pull off paying no attention.
Don't worry. That's not going to be a problem for you. Yeah.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. No, you don't need to worry about that.
But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of change that comes out of this situation. There's going to be a lot of growth that comes out of it. I really do think that one of the biggest things that's going to come out of it is remembering finally to appreciate those silver linings.
You
get your nose buried in all this stuff that you don't like so often, so continuously, so moment to moment, day by day, week by week, month by month. You eventually get to the point where you say, enough. There's got to be something good going on here. What's the good part?
Well, and the thing is focusing, trying to keep your focus in the present, right? I mean, I personally know people, lots of people actually, that worked in the service industry that lost their jobs as soon as all this happened, because the restaurants cut their staff to where they could just have a couple of people, oftentimes the owners, who are trying to do the takeout. So they've got a skeletal crew because that's all they can really handle right now.
Right.
And so people in those positions, which essential worker positions, right? People that are putting their lives on the line, basically, that are working, and then people that have their jobs suddenly cut and don't have savings, you know, they don't make enough money to be, oh yeah, I can do fine for 6 months without a paycheck. They're not in that position.
Right.
The place to focus is just in the now, because all of the stress and worry comes from thinking, what the heck am I going to do 2 weeks from now when my rent is due? Exactly. And so, you know, it might not be a huge consolation, but it feels better to realize if you have a place to live now, and if you have food to eat now, and you have, like, today, like right now, like, are you okay in this moment?
It is incredibly important to do that. And I say that from experience, because I mentioned a few moments ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I was not doing well with money. I was doing very poorly with money. Actually, I can tell you exactly what year. It was 2013 to 2014. We were in desperate straits. And that's also when it led to one of the most amazing sets of miraculous law of attraction manifestations I've ever seen in my life. But
That's where they come from. That's where big miracles come from, is when there's a big opportunity for a big miracle, right?
That's true. And what made the difference was what you just described, that little activity of saying, well, yeah, I don't know where the money's going to come from, but right at this instant in time, I have a roof over my head. Right at this instant in time, I've got food to eat. Right at this instant in time, I've got clothing to wear. Right at this instant in time, my needs are met.
Yep.
And even when I was doing it at that time, which felt desperate, I mean, literally what I'm going through right now with this stuff is mild compared to what I went through then.
Yeah.
What I was going through then was so overwhelming. And yet I tried to do this thing anyway, usually pulling it off for like, you know, a minute at a time. And that was about all I could handle. But just the act of doing that did one very, very important thing right off the bat before it accomplished anything else. It calmed me down.
Yes.
It calmed me down. And when I calmed down, other possibilities started to occur that were not occurring to me a moment before.
Exactly. Because you brought yourself into the present moment.
Yes.
So like all the things we've been talking about today actually help to bring us into the present moment.
Right.
The idea of finding something we appreciate and appreciating a little bit more, present moment. Mm-hmm. Some other tricks are just asking yourself what the temperature in the room is. Can you feel the clothing on your skin? Is there anything in the air you can smell, taste, you know, all your senses? What do you hear right now? All of that brings you back into the present moment. And then asking yourself those questions, like you said, look, I may not know where the next meal's coming from, but I do have a little something to eat for right now. I mean, just present moment thinking. It can create the shift that allows you to see the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that opportunities are everywhere. But at that very low victim level of energy, we usually can't see them.
That's right.
We don't see them. So bringing ourselves into the present and having some determination that we're going to take responsibility and somehow it's going to work out. Like you said, you know, you had a desperate time that also produced some of the greatest manifestations. So when else would you need a miracle? People want to see miracles. People want to see magic and miracles all the time.
Yeah.
Right. But when else would you need a miracle than if you were in dire straits? That's when you need the miracles.
Right. Yeah.
We don't like that part of it. It's like, well, maybe I don't need a miracle.
And I'll be perfectly honest. It wasn't, the miracles weren't comfortable. They were miraculous. They were actually painful to go through, to experience the miracles happen, because I was going moment to moment experiencing, oh, this isn't working, this isn't working. Oh my God, it just worked. Oh, this isn't working. Oh my God, it just worked. How did that happen?
Right?
That happened like 3 or 4 times in about a 2-week period. Anyone who wants to know the whole story, I've told it in past episodes, and it's also in the book that we wrote. But the amazing thing is when you're going through it, you're literally trying to just find little pieces of time where you can just kind of say, okay, I'm just going to put it aside for the moment. I can't handle all that stress right now. Right now, I just need to feel good. So I'm just going to do whatever it takes to feel good right now. Those are the things that do make that difference. They make the biggest difference in the world.
And, you know, I've said this before, but I can recall at least 3 times when I was on the phone with a client and they were waiting for like a call, mm-hmm. a call about something.
Yeah.
And it was way overdue. Mm-hmm. And in the process of coaching them, which was bringing them into the present moment, which was bringing them into a recognition of their needs and their feelings, giving them clarity, right? All of that things that you just said, just like calm down. The phone has rung for them and they've said, oh my gosh, I'm getting a call. With me on the other line, like, oh my gosh, I'm getting a call. Can you hold on? Yes, I hold on. And they come back and they're like, I got the job or whatever. It's like amazing.
It is.
Amazing. So I say that to say we all would benefit by remembering how fast things can change. How fast things can change for us when we're in a desperate position. Sometimes one phone call, right, changes everything. Mm-hmm. And so those things happen when we can relax.
Yeah.
It's like you said, calm down. That's non-resistance.
That's right.
Calming down, or relaxing.
It may not even be non-resistance. It may just be lower resistance.
Love
right?
that so much because it's so true.
I mean, so often, yeah. if you imagine resistance being like a cliff wall, with a little fissure in it for the water to get in, you know, it's not like the cliff wall went away. It's just the fissure opened up a little bit.
It's so true. It's so true. So we just want to lower our resistance a little bit, lessen the resistance a little bit. I shouldn't say lower resistance. That doesn't sound good in a time where there's a pandemic.
It depends what you're resisting.
Right? Yeah. So just recognizing how fast things can change and that everything's going to be all right. You know, I tell this story. It always still kind of seems so simple to me. But in 2009, I guess, I was on the phone with my coach And I was really, really struggling with some things that were going on and just hopeless. And my coach at the time asked me a question that I still look back and think it was such a wise question in its simplicity, and a very honest question from a coach that didn't know what to say. And she said, "What could I say to you right now that would make you feel better?" And I said, probably through tears, "I just need somebody to tell me that everything's going to be okay."
Oh, geez.
And she said, "Cindy, everything's going to be okay." And and in that moment, even though, you know, it's like she was just saying back to me the thing I told her to say, right? But but it was what I needed to hear, and I heard it, and things started to shift. And so I'm just saying that to anybody listening, everything's going to be okay.
That thought, wanting to hear that everything is going to be okay, took me right back to 2013, 2014. That was exactly the phrase I wanted to hear, precisely word for word.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know there are a lot of people right now that need to hear that as well, right? So from us to you, everything's going to be okay.
Absolutely true. And here's an interesting nuance on it too, because one of the things that some people will say in response to that is, well, we know everything's not going to be okay. People are dying. People are sick, blah, blah, you know, they'll list all the things that are going wrong. And it's a hard answer perhaps for somebody like that to hear, partly because they don't really want to hear it. But you know what? Even in those situations, it's still all going to be okay.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's when I always go back to the idea of like sacred contracts. Do I know it's true? No. Can I tell you for absolute 100% certain that I made certain intentions before I came into being in this incarnation? No. But it's really useful and helpful for me to choose to entertain that idea. And to say, maybe this is what certain people signed up for, so that they could teach us something, so that we could learn something, so that they could learn something, whatever it is. It's not easy to hear, but to me, it's easier than complete, you know, futility and hopelessness to recognize that change is constant in nature and that this too shall pass.
I would say, from my own experience, that futility, hopelessness, which I would kind of glop together under the word depression. Depression, in my mind, is the worst. It's worse than anything. And there are many people who are depressed who agree because they kill themselves because they think it's better. There's really nothing worse than just living constantly in a depressed state, in a state of lack, in a state of hopelessness, in a state of absolute feeling of dread. There's nothing worse than that. No death is worse than that. No life is worse than that. I mean, that is the worst you can possibly get at.
It reminds me of, I think it was Tim Ferriss that wrote about when he was suffering from depression and was suicidal, and that the thing that stopped him was that he asked himself, what if I kill myself and it's actually not any better?
Oh my goodness, what a way of thinking about it. Holy cow.
Oh. So yeah, depression is so painful. And, you know, I'm always the first person to encourage someone, if you're suffering from depression, reach out for help.
Yes.
Right? Reach out for help. And find what helps you feel better.
And I'd also point out that is absolutely the best time to climb out of your comfort zone, because your comfort zone is no longer giving you any comfort at all.
Ooh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
You know, our comfort zone is often anything but comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So take a risk, have the conversation, learn some new skills, like putting, you know, observation ahead of judgments, finding out what it is you really need that's not being fulfilled, that's causing you to have feelings that are uncomfortable, and make a determination within yourself that you're going to get those needs met.
Really good. That's a great way to summarize the show too. Hey, before we sign off, I want to make sure I give two promo announcements. Normally we do them earlier on Wednesdays, but we were getting into this. This is good. We just kind of slipped the mind. But yeah, two announcements. First one is a relatively new one that I'm doing this week. We're doing a promotion to try to reach out to people who have not yet heard about LOA Today. We're trying to encourage more and more people to take it into their lives, particularly now. I just feel like this it's a really strong thing for me. I want more people to know about LOA Today, because people today especially need to have that good feeling outlet. And there are so few of them. For certain people, there are so few of them out there. So
yeah.
I'm trying to reach them. One of the ways that I'm reaching them is through direct promotion. And I have a little video I created that I posted on the LOA Today page at Facebook that I'm using for that purpose. And I'm asking listeners, and many listeners have done this so far, so thank you to those of you who have done it. I'm asking listeners, sure, share, like it and all that kind of stuff. That's great. But I really want comments, because I want people who see the post to see all these comments from listeners saying why they like the show. So please take the time.
Thank you.
Go to the Facebook page for LOA Today. You'll see it at the top. I pinned it at the top, so it'll be the first main post that you see. And just say something about why you like LOA Today, presuming that you like LOA Today. I imagine if you've listened this far, you probably do like it. That's kind of an educated guess, you know. But seriously, I'm really looking for more and more people to do that, because I want, when people see this post for the first time, I want them to see all these people saying, yes, this is really valuable to me to have this kind of entertainment 5 days a week that really lifts me up, because then they're going to be more likely to give it a shot. Whereas if they don't see a whole lot of activity there, it's very easy to say, there's probably nothing to that. And we know there's something to it. So that's why I wanted to encourage people who have not heard about the show to give it a try. And you can play a big role in helping to make that happen. So please do that. And then, of course, the other promotional message, the one that we do all the time, is, are you subscribed? Well, if you're not subscribed, most of you are, but if you're not subscribed, please become a subscriber. And if you don't know how to do it, we've set it up on loatoday.net's homepage. At the top of the page, just follow the instructions, one or two clicks and you're subscribed. And then be sure you share the fact with others, and check us out on YouTube, because we live stream to YouTube, except for today. Believe it or not, the live stream didn't work on YouTube. So I'll be uploading this video after we're done here. But one way or another, it does get on YouTube. And if you click the bell, you get notified every time that we're on YouTube as well. So subscribe and keep following us, and make us part of your daily routine, because we all need to keep that vibration high. We need to keep that energy high. And we here at LOA Today aim to help you do exactly that.
So, agreed.
So Cindy, thank you very much for being one of our elevation raisers. We really appreciate that. Thank you also to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.